afternoon. Welcome in to the maiden voyage here of the very creatively named WEEI Afternoon Show. Brought to you by the same creative minds that brought you the Washington football team, as well as many others. I'm Christian Arkin, Andy Hart here as well. Hi, Andy.
I thought you were host one and I was host two.
That, you know what?
Feels like that would fall in line with the afternoon show.
That would have been better, maybe.
Or is your name after and my name noon?
Ah.
Or I can be after and you can be noon.
Thing one and thing two.
Yes. Host goes here and looks like this.
It's nice to be in here. Nice to be here on Boston Sports Original. Sitting in the big chair. Sitting here with you, Andy. We've worked together not as much as maybe I would have liked, but we've worked together more recently, I'd say, in the last couple of years. You were obviously, in and around. I'm a big fan of yours. Love reading your stuff. Not as much column writing for you these days, I would imagine, now that you're in here with me.
I'm going to spew it on air instead of spewing it on the internet.
And for those that were wondering, and I was one of these people, the Six Rings podcast is going to remain intact. You're not leaving Fitzy high.
Hell no. Fitzy and I, whether we like it or not, are attached.
Begged and pleaded.
It's Patriots season, so keep listening to Six Rings. And I appreciate you bringing that up because we actually just posted the latest episode where we had a good get thanks to Fitzy. Devin McCourty, who did your Patriots game, or at least a portion of it, on Sunday night in Washington and is working for NBC again this year. He gave us about a half hour of his time to talk about all things Patriots and the quarterback controversy.
I listened to that today. Very good stuff from him. The microphone needed a little work, but he got there eventually. I don't know. Doesn't he have like nice equipment?
You would think so.
He's a broadcast professional.
Forget that. He made like $70 million in his career or something.
Also that, yes.
Now he's working for NBC. Mm-hmm. He's a broadcast professional. I assume he does Zooms and meetings and different things. And, well, it was probably, just quick behind the scenes, probably not a great start when he logged on and he's like, "Can you guys see me?" And we're like, "No, there's a black square." And he's like, "That's weird." And he's like fiddling, or he couldn't get his camera to work. So any audio at all was appreciated. So,
all right.
And appreciated him coming on the podcast.
We will hear clips from that podcast and what Devin McCourty had to say about the big story of the day, which you just heard there. Dan Orlovsky, who we decided to open the show with, our very first show, the first voice you heard on our brand new show, Dan Orlovsky. So there's a trivia question for you someday down the line.
Might be appropriate, too. A guy maybe who made his name as a backup quarterback, and, we're the afternoon show with host one and host two.
We spoke with him on the previous afternoon show. We spoke to Dan Orlovsky a lot. You know, he was a frequent contributor. I think on Wednesdays is when we used to talk with him. We went back and forth with him all the time. You heard him there, and you've heard a lot of other people, I'd say, in the last 72 hours now, and even really before that. I mean, this isn't some new take or anything, saying that you must not. Play Drake May week one. It's just, at this point, it would be committing malpractice. It would be something you could not pay Dan Orlovsky any amount of money. There's no number you could cite that he would say, "Okay, fine, I'll take that money and I'll play Drake May at quarterback." He would not do it. It's not happening. Where do we stand on that? Where do you stand on that?
I think that's absolutely ridiculous. And I know we have an organizational policy, I believe, against using AI. But if I were looking to get fired in my first show and put together something with AI, I would have, "Hello, you play the best player." Like, just, to me, it's so simple.
Who was that?
That's Herm Edwards.
That was Herm Edwards.
Yeah. "Hello, you play to win the game." But I can't use AI.
Oh, right, yeah, Herm Edwards.
So you change it to best player. See, AI could have done it for me, and you would have known exactly who it was.
Sure.
But we're not allowed to do that, so we won't be doing that.
So we do our best.
We do our best with what we have. That's the story of our lives here, 2-6. But you play the best. You have a head coach who said competition, competition, competition. He has said that more than silos and collaboration. Well, maybe not more than collaboration, but he has said competition a lot. And then he kind of admitted that Drake May won the competition. So the reason you would play a guy, because in this whole world of meritocracy, I still believe in America here, we're still a meritocracy, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So whatever the best is, they get the opportunity. And Drake May is the best. Because all the other crap that Dan Orlovsky talked about, when you're drafted in the top three, you're probably not going to have, quote, plus offensive line, plus weapons.
Right.
So every quarterback essentially drafted high should have to sit for a year or two because you can't give, they might have a good coach, and that's fair. We don't know what Alex Van Pelt is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could have had a veteran established offensive coordinator.
And sometimes
here, teams
trade up, you know, they're not terrible.
Sure,
they trade up into the
most
top.
Teams,
the Niners did that with Trey Lance. So,
most teams that pick really high, you're not giving the young guy plus.
No.
Like the classic example is Peyton Manning. He goes to the Colts, they stink, and he throws 28 interceptions, And a year later, he's like an MVP candidate, right? Like, sometimes when you earn that opportunity to be drafted really high, it comes with the responsibility of, well, you kind of need to put this team on your shoulders. And I know basketball is different, but, like, happens all the time in basketball, right? These LeBron Jameses, the Victor Wembanyamas, these elite number ones, the franchise has just hitched themselves to you. Right. Fair or not, surroundings or not, coach or not. And that's where Drake May is. He's the franchise. And this, I know this now goes to the next step is, yeah, but what if you break him? Well, then he was breakable. Like, I'm so sick of the break him thing. If he breaks, then he's breakable. And if he's the right guy, then he's borderline unbreakable. Play him.
Yeah. I have been saying that for a long time. I've been with you, Andy. I've been one of the people. I didn't want necessarily to even draft a quarterback this year, and Drake May wasn't my first choice. We argued about that way back when it happened. I'll admit, he's impressed me a lot. I mean, he's last two games, I thought he's looked much better than I expected him to at this point. I think that early on in camp, that also sort of led to believe, you know, just based on what people were saying, led me to believe that maybe this guy's in way over his head here, because it seemed like things weren't going swimmingly, at least early on. It seemed like Brissett was way out ahead of him. I think he's closed that gap. I think that's clear, and I want him to play. And then I watched that game on Sunday, and I don't know. I mean, I think that as much as I think that's the right thing to do, as much as I agree with everything you just said about him being the franchise and how you're never going to be drafted into a perfect situation when you're a top three pick in the NFL or in the NBA or any sport, like all that, I agree with that. And I think you're right about that. And I think expecting that is stupid. And you also are burning a year of this guy's rookie contract, which for someone like Robert Kraft, that probably matters. And then I watched Okorafor lining up with like 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage. I watched that one play. It was, I forget if it was the play Brissett got sacked on, but it was unbelievable how you saw one guard pull over, hit the tackle, and then get chipped by the running back.
Yeah.
Not one member of the Washington Commanders got touched on that play. It was three Patriots all blocking each other. And that was like the third of like 10 penalties that happened in the first half. And I was watching all of that and thinking, you know, There's some examples here of guys like maybe Andrew Luck, right? Like Andrew Luck had to retire at 29 because he was just completely banged up and that line got him killed. And if you're watching on Twitch, you can see this this awesome play, this great O-line play that was here now. And we'll get to the offensive line. There's obviously a lot to get to. But when it comes to where we stand on this whole thing, I've been steadfast on Drake May. I'm wavering now. I don't know.
Why? Stay strong.
It's not about me staying strong. All right, me staying strong. Is he?
Yes, absolutely.
You sure about that?
I've been thoroughly impressed.
Because the guy ahead of him got demolished, and then he had to come out of the game.
Who's the guy ahead of him?
Jacoby Brissett.
Oh, okay.
Yes. I thought you were going to do the Mac Jones thing, because he broke suddenly like...
No.
Because I don't think those two could be any different.
It's a bad analogy. I agree.
So one seems like the spoiled, rich kid who grew up as an only child. Probably should check that. I'm not even sure if he's an only child. He seems like it. He seems that way. And Drake May is like the runt of this Gronk-like litter of boys. Mm-hmm. I feel like he's been fighting his whole life for everything. When he talked about, with you guys, the basketball games
breaking
and broken arms and those kinds of things. So he has been preparing for this, whether he knew it or not, since he was a little kid, just dealing with brothers and family dynamics. So I hate that argument. The other argument I'm willing to listen to, because you don't see chaos like that very often on an offensive line.
I've never seen it. Like in any.
No.
I covered
Dante Scarnecchia, God bless him, still alive, but is rolling in his future grave. Like, that has to annoy him so much to see that ineptitude.
Don't Opie and Anthony
in a unit. Like, I don't understand how that. And Scott Peters seems like a nice man. Mm-hmm. I spoke with him for the first time the other day when they had coaches availability, but how does he sleep after that game when his offensive line looks that bad? But do you think that's going to... So are you benching May all year because the line stinks?
No, but I'm maybe not starting him right away.
It's going to stink in October. It's going to stink in November. It stunk last year, just an FYI.
I don't agree with that. I think offensive lines get better over the course of the season.
You think this one's going to get better?
A little bit. Yes.
When David Andrews gets hurt. Well, is that when it'll get better?
Well, when Andrews is playing, he didn't play. Leverett was out
there. You think there's no shot that either of those two guys, the two core guys I think we can all circle, are Onwenu and Andrews?
Mm-hmm.
You think they're all going to play 17 games?
I have no idea what they're going to do. They're probably going to get injured. Everybody could possibly get injured. Okay. Drake may get injured.
So you start crappy and lacking depth, usually end crappier and lacking picking more depth.
Okay, if we're going to play the hypotheticals.
Because they're not picking up guys on the waiver wire. I know that's the big thing around, well, we got the third spot on the waiver wire. Oh, great. So I can get some team's 11th best offensive
Elliot
lineman.
Elliot Wolf's very excited about what could happen.
Starting left tackles, it's weird. They just come across the waiver wire. It's the damnedest thing
in the
NFL.
Just release them. It's awesome.
It happens all the time.
For who's going to get injured? I mean, they could all get injured, of course. I mean, anybody could get injured.
So
Drake
play football.
May could get injured.
So play football.
Sure. But then the line gets better over the course of a season?
I don't think theirs will.
I think it will.
I think it gets better. Now, a guy like Laydon Robinson, who wasn't very good the other night,
mm-hmm.
a rookie, young guy, I think he has an opportunity to get better. But are they going to, on a totality, get better? I watched a couple years ago where it sucked and it sucked and it sucked, and then they were excited because Connor McDermott sucked less.
I remember that. Yeah.
Remember when Bill said, thank God we have him?
Right.
Like, that's what we're looking at. The famous Lou Maloney said, suck less. Suck mm-hmm. a little bit, just suck a little. That's what you're looking for, is they suck less as the season goes on. I don't have great hope in that because I don't see what changes for the better. Being a pessimist, being in New England, I generally assume one of the key guys that can't get hurt will probably get hurt.
Yeah, and you'd probably be right about that. I mean, who knows? At this point, I'm expecting the worst pretty much across the board with this team because I don't think that it's very organized right now, and I think that they're all sort of just trying to feel around in the dark, mm-hmm. which, you know, I mean, there's a lot of teams that end up in that position year after year, whether they drafted a new quarterback or not, just because they're not very good. The Patriots, that's your new reality right now. The other reason why I don't think Mac Jones is a good analogy, on top of what you just said, them not being similar in personality, is that Mac Jones had a fine rookie year.
Right.
Right? Like, his rookie year was the best part of his career, other than this preseason that he's having in Jacksonville right now. But in terms of, like, actual games that count, he peaked his rookie year. I don't know if Drake May is going to do that. I hope he doesn't. I hope that his rookie year is not the best year of his career. And I think that people saying, well, you know, you don't want to ruin Mac Jones. He didn't get ruined by being put in the starting role in week one.
Nope.
That didn't ruin him at all. The ruination of Mac Jones, I believe, started the second year, and everybody believes it started with Patricia and Judge and all that. Even if he started to fall off in the regular season, fine, we can have that argument, but he wasn't ruined until that second year. That's when all that happened. And that, I mean, listen, that's worst-case scenario for Drake May, second only to him sucking from the beginning to the end and never really being able to do it. But I think that I've seen enough, to think that he's the best quarterback on this roster and that he's ready to go out there and play in the NFL. I don't think there's any doubt about that anymore.
And I think the head coach agrees with, well, not that he's ready to play, but that he might be the best quarterback on this roster based on the totality of the offseason. And that's the secondary aspect here that I think could become the primary aspect. Jerod Mayo is also trying to find his way as a head coach, and he's setting the culture. He's talked about it. Well, you set a culture on competition, and everybody knows who won the competition, and then they show up in Cincinnati, and the guy who won the competition doesn't get to start the game? What kind of a message does that send to a locker room, to a team, to a culture, to a meritocracy, right? Aren't you building on fraudulent decisions?
Absolutely you are.
I mean, Tom Curran on this station earlier, and we'll play it later, compared it to the Generals and the Globetrotters. Might as well have compared it to wrestling, where, like, yeah, you can put on a good show, but in the end, Hulk Hogan's going to drop his leg on you and pin you and win,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it says here, Hulk Hogan wins because he's our star, he's our moneymaker,
right.
Whatever. I just think that's a bad tone to set for an entire organization. If everybody believes the young guy won the competition that you set forth as a true competition, and this is where we need to get into later, I think Jerod Mayo is to blame for all of this debate we're having, Orlovsky's comments, your comments, my thoughts. He should have and could have.
I blame him for
shut
your thoughts
this down.
Too.
Yes. I do too. I'm not going to blame myself. Somebody else needs to take the blame.
Of course.
So Jerod Mayo has mishandled this. If I ask you a simple question,
he's
right
painted
now,
himself into a corner.
Who has two rookies? We have two rookies. We have a head coach who's been on the job for, what, 8 months?
Mm-hmm.
And a rookie quarterback who's been on the job for 4 or 5 months?
Yep.
Who's done their job better as a rookie so far in a New England Patriots uniform / hat?
100% the quarterback.
Thank you. No 100%. Further questions, Your Honor.
No
further questions.
There's
why does the coach get to keep coaching, but the quarterback doesn't get to play?
I mean,
which one has shown he's less ready?
That's a fair question. It's absolutely a fair question. One of them was coaching already. One of them was in college. So, I mean, there's that.
It doesn't matter. I'm saying since we've seen them try to do
in
their jobs,
in their new roles. In their new roles.
Who's better?
Yeah.
Drake May.
Thank absolutely. You. And that's to say we've seen him out there throwing the ball around. I don't necessarily know that Gerard Mayo's play calling has been the reason why they've lost the preseason
game. No, I'm saying totality.
In the totality.
You know, saying burn cash and setting the culture and doing X, Y. There's a lot of things that go into his job.
If getting interviewed as often as Gerard Mayo was, then maybe he'd have some gaffes like that, too. I don't know.
Does he have a single gaffe?
Because
I haven't heard one.
I haven't heard one either.
I think he's actually done a remarkably good job in a relatively tough situation.
He has. When we first had him on, like the very first quarterback we interviewed, and we will be interviewing a quarterback today, not Drake May. We will talk to Jacoby Brissett. That's coming up at 3 o'clock. We'll also be talking with Jonathan Jones. He will join us at 4. Rob Bradford will be in at the 4:30 segment here as we, well, try and pull the Red Sox up out of the grave, as dismal as they've been looking lately. We'll get into them a little bit later as well. But, yeah, we talked to Drake May beginning of camp, and I asked him, I said, do you want to start? Thinking that would be like, all right, tough, how are you going to answer this? He answered it very well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he answered it. He was diplomatic about it. He said, of course I want to start. I'm a professional. We all want to start. We all want to get as much experience as we can. We all want to be, you know, out there playing. But I understand I'm a rookie, and I trust Coach Mayo, and whatever happens, happens, and I'll compete for the job. It was very diplomatic, more diplomatic than anything I ever remember Mac Jones saying.
Right.
So I think that there is something to that. He's handled it pretty well. And Mayo, for all the things we're discussing here, has really put an effort out to try and be transparent. And I do, on some level, appreciate that. It's just he goes...
It's regrettable.
He goes on and on and on and on. And by the time he's done with his question, he's answered it like three different ways mm-hmm. that all contradict each other. And you're like, all right, so what? Who's going to start? Like, you right. know, like, it's just, it never... It's almost like he's doing the same thing Bill's doing, just with more words, if that makes any sense.
Confusing us with words rather than confusing us with lack of words.
Yes.
That's an interesting spin on it.
It's the same conclusion,
oh, yeah.
I feel like.
You mean when he tells us a guy is a starter, we don't have a starter, he's QB1, but he lost the competition. And
right.
you're like, that's all one guy? How is that all true about one guy? That can't possibly be true.
Yeah. Yeah, so there you go. 617-779-7937. There's your phone number. Do we have that Mayo cut, Stiz? If you do, if you have it, the one of him talking about how Drake May has outplayed Jacoby Brissett. This was with the Greg Hill Show. And this is one of the many answers he's given when asked this question. Not more.
Yeah, look, you know, let's talk about the injury first. I don't know. Jacoby may come in here today. We got in at 4 o'clock in the morning. May come in today saying, you know, his shoulder is no good, or you know. So I'm not going to get too far down the road on if Jacoby could play or couldn't play. What I will say is that this is a true competition. It wasn't fluff or anything like that. It's a true competition. And I would say at this current point, you know, Drake has outplayed Jacoby. Now, in saying that, we have to take in the full body of work, you know, going all the way back to the spring and the beginning of training camp, and we'll see where we end up. But those are the conversations that will happen here over the next couple of days.
So you probably heard that clip a lot if you've been listening to the station. He said it on the Greg Hill Show, and it was been blasted out all over the place, and should be. That is a definitive statement. That's one of the few definitive statements he's made. Drake has outplayed Jacoby. He said it right there. He said it in plain English, okay? That wasn't, you know, it wasn't some sort of mysterious, well, you know, they've both been good, but blah, blah, blah. No.
Right.
Drake May has outplayed Jacoby. And then he talks about the full picture of everything. Like, I don't give a rat's ass what happened in the spring. I do not care. That doesn't matter. We're talking about a 21-year-old and his progression, and he's progressed past the veteran now, right? I mean, that's, we all agree. We've all seen it.
Real football is what Mayo called it when training camp started and they put the pads on.
Yeah.
Real football. So in the portion of real football that we have to evaluate over the last, whatever it is, 20-something days, 28 days, he says that Drake May won the job.
Mm-hmm.
Except he may not have won the job.
No.
So the confusion comes from Gerard Mayo, and I understand he's in a tough spot. I do. And I also understand that there's a weird layer here. He's not even the head coach of the offense.
Right.
He himself has said that. The head coach of the offense, which I would assume the head coach of the offense picks the quarterback, on some level, is Alex Van Pelt, who I would definitely say personality-wise seems like a guy who'd err on the side of, let's give the kid extra time. Let's not throw him to the wolves. Let's not trial by fire him. You know, slow play the plan, because we've heard a lot about the plan, which Gerard got into a little bit with the Greg Hill Show, but didn't want to go too deep into what the plan was. But I would also argue, deviate from the plan. If maybe the plan seemed like it was right in week one of camp.
Right.
And then by week four, you're like, wow, he's really, this last 3 weeks, he's really made a push, as Van Pelt said. Well, then change the plan.
And the plan all along, according to him and according to everybody else, has allowed for the fact that maybe Drake May is going to ball out and win the competition. So did he win it or not? 617-779-7937. There's your phone number. We're going to take a quick break here. Stiz is going to get you caught up on what's trending. And when we come back, we are going to hear from Devin McCourty on the Six Rings podcast and get into this offensive line, the biggest problem right now and the most concerning thing about this team by far. Here's Stiz.
The Greg Hill Show, weekdays 6 to 10.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
All right, let's get you caught up on what's trending right now on WEEI and WEEI.com. Trending brought to you by Timeout Market Boston. Red Sox lost both games of their doubleheader against the Blue Jays yesterday. The Sox lost the afternoon game, which was a continuation of a suspended game from June. They lost that one 4-1, and then lost again last night 7-3. Nick Pivetta earned the loss, even though he finished the night with 10 strikeouts. Red Sox will play another three against Toronto. The next one goes down tonight. First pitch at 7:10 from Fenway Park. Cooper Criswell will take the mound for your Boston Red Sox. He'll face off against Yariel Rodriguez for the Jays. Joe Weil will get you ready for the game starting at 6:10 with the Mass Mutual pregame show. Don't forget, you can catch both the pregame and the game right here on WEEI or download the Odyssey app, and you can take us wherever you go. After two seasons with New England, the Patriots have decided to move on from quarterback Bailey Zappe. According to multiple reports, Zappe has been informed of New England's intention to waive him. In the 2024 preseason, Zappe was 15 of 25 for 137 yards. Both Cole Strange and Kendrick Bourne have been placed on the PUP list, and Adam Schefter is reporting that Joey Sly has won the kicking competition, and New England will move on from 2023 fourth-rounder Chad Ryland. Again, trending brought to you by Timeout Market Boston. Experience the essence of Boston's culinary and cultural scene at Timeout Market Boston, nestled in the Fenway. From live music sessions to food and beverage tastings and everything in between, Timeout Market Boston showcases the best of the city under one roof. I'm Stiz. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. More WE's afternoon show coming up.
Stiz, back there on the Wheels of Steel.
That's right.
This is his new song, right?
Yeah, Houdini. You like it? Did you listen to the album, Arkin?
I have not listened to the whole thing.
I have.
Andy Hart has heard the new Eminem album.
Can I tell you why?
Yes.
Because I didn't like the song that much.
Real, this one. Yeah, but you know how he does with his singles.
Well, that's what he did 20 years ago.
Yeah. See,
I like singles like this at age 50, whatever he is, I don't know. A little too bouncy for me. A little too. It put me back in like a weird headspace here.
Yeah.
Anti fun.
Yes. Anti.
This isn't gonna work. Then we
anti Eminem.
I gotta go talk to Ken
doing this. Anyways, nah, this song's all right. But it didn't make me want to rush out to Newbury Comics and buy the new Eminem CD.
Those were the days. I will say there's
strawberries.
There's a song on there called Temporary Arcan that'll hit you right in the feels.
Right in the feels?
Right in the feels.
Okay, good. Devin McCourty there talking about the offensive line and the coaching and the reaction to all of that. You were talking with him, obviously. I mean, I think that sort of hung over everybody's perception of what to talk about for this thing, whether it's the quarterback, whether it's the coaching staff, all of it. You sort of look at this offensive line and I wasn't expecting that to be the biggest issue. I wasn't expecting the offensive line coming into this season to be the one thing that everybody looks at and says, all right, sound the alarm. Something has to be done about this or it's all gonna go to hell. And that's where we are right now. I mean, when I worked at ESPN New Hampshire many, many moons ago, we did the show called Friday Night Lights, where we just covered all the high school teams, all the public school teams. It was like this wraparound. It was a great show.
Should we do that on Fridays?
I have never in 2 or 3 years of doing Friday Night Lights saw an offensive line performance in a football game like that, and that was high school in New Hampshire. And there's no real way to describe it. There's no way to describe it that's not... That doesn't make it sound like I'm howling and exaggerating here. I mean, we all watched that. It was that bad. And that was the preseason, and that was against the Washington Commanders, second and third string players. So I guess I ask you now, what is to be done, if anything, about this offensive line situation?
Well, I mean, I mocked it a little earlier, but they have actually acknowledged the fact that they may be looking at the waiver wire to acquire offensive linemen. And the team has done this in recent years. That is the one thing. This is not a new phenomenon. This offensive line has had its issues at various positions for multiple years now. Mm-hmm. In the Bill Belichick era,
in part due to Bill Belichick and the way he handled the offensive line moving back a few years. So I did expect this to be horrific. I didn't buy into, well, Caden Wallace, I know he was a right tackle in Penn State, but he'll be an NFL left tackle.
Right.
I didn't buy into Chukwuma Okorafor. I know he got benched as a right tackle in Pittsburgh.
For a rookie.
But he's going to be a left tackle starter here. Like, I didn't buy any of that. And they haven't had somebody just pop up. Like, for a while, it was Vedarian Lowe, which we all have negative history with. He seems like a really nice man. I actually spoke with him. He did a media on at camp a couple, and I kind of felt bad after talking to him. I was like, oh, he's, it's too bad he stinks because
nice
he seems
guy.
Like a really nice guy. But they all stink. They don't have.
Can you be a nice guy and be a good offensive lineman? You know,
is that... There is a question about. I've had somebody within the organization post some of their linemen are too nice. Maybe we need a Logan Mankins who would literally punch in the balls.
Yeah.
And they may need some of that. And maybe some of these options, even though they're lower tier skill options, may also not quite have the fight. They actually asked Vedarian Lowe, which stuck out to me, do you like getting help with chip blocks? And he's like, yeah, I'll take all the help I can get. And there was a part of me that didn't love the answer. Like, shouldn't there be an alphaness to a left tackle?
Yeah.
If you help me, fine, but I'll be okay on my own. I'll do the damn job myself kind of mentality. So
he's like, I wish I had three running backs.
Right.
That'd be
like,
awesome.
The more the merrier. No, the line isn't talented on paper, and it hasn't been talented on the field. And I even had fans... Friends who were like, yeah, all you guys in the first week of camp said the line sucked, and then I watched the Panthers game, and it wasn't that bad.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel now? How do you feel now that you've watched the rest of the preseason? It's a fatal flaw. We use that term. I think it's quite clear for this offense, for this quarterback, for everybody, this offensive line could be a fatal flaw, and it doesn't help when Elliot Wolf is like, no, I think it's fine. I think we got the guys. You don't have the guys because we have eyes. And we watch practice, and we watch games. You don't have the guys. I actually give Mayo credit for, I think he said, like, yeah, the starting guard might not even be on the team. Yeah, that's not great, but I appreciate the honesty.
Yeah, he might get cut from some other team. That's really what you're looking for. And that doesn't even – you just mentioned practice. The joint practice with the Eagles, how many times did both of them get sacked against the ones on the Eagle? Like, it was – they couldn't even run a play. Like, it was going on and on and on. Now, it wasn't real sacks, and they weren't actually getting hit, but, like, this was – that was the only time you ever really saw them going up against the ones on a defense other than their own starters, you know?
This offensive line has been dominated by everyone it faced. That's practice against their own team, dominated. Practice against the Eagles, dominated. And we also need to remember – we just saw Sunday night, it was the Patriots ones versus the Commanders backups.
Right.
The Commanders are a team that, like you, picked in the top three picks in the draft.
Right.
Not exactly the Eagles or the Niners, one of these, oh my God, they got so much talent up and down the roster. They're a rebuilding, find their way franchise with a new coach, a new GM, and a new quarterback, just like you. And you couldn't compete with their backups.
I know.
That's alarming.
They actually have like a pretty decent defensive line.
Oh, my God.
Payne and Jonathan Allen. That would have been a bloodbath if those guys were out there.
Yeah, if you – and I get back to – you said it, that one clip where they can't even figure out how to – their technique, like get to where they're supposed to be blocking somebody. I don't know if they can block the person when they get there or not, but they're not even there yet. They can't line up. You have a frustrated referee saying, again,
once
he lined
again.
Up too far. Like – that's how bad they have been. We can't even get to the point where we assess that they're actually bad talent-wise because they don't even reach that point in the process.
How about the idea, and this is something that was floated out on the broadcast and other places, that there isn't going to be an emphasis now on offensive linemen taking that first step back because it's been last year, you remember. I mean, I forget the guy on the Chiefs. What's his name? The tackle on the Chiefs who would start every play by taking the step back.
Juwan. Jaguars.
Whatever.
Sign him as well. Okay.
Whoever he is, the big guy on the Chiefs, and not just him, but lots of other instances of seeing this where they take the step back right before the snap and they're trying to get that out of there. Any thought that maybe they're just emphasizing that and that's why they threw so many penalty flags?
Oh, no question. That's what. Yeah, they've done that over the years with illegal contact, roughing the passer. But usually they do it when they're trying to remove something from the game or tighten it up a little bit, get people to play a certain way. So, yeah, I think they're trying to get tackles to get a little closer because everything is on the offense's side.
But
let's tighten this up a little bit.
They weren't calling false start. They were saying he was lined up wrong. Like, you know, he was lined up off the line.
Which,
he was lined up in the backfield.
All it takes is
look to the left or to the right, depending on which lineman you are.
If you don't have to turn your head all the way to see the quarterback, then you're probably not on the line.
That's where it was. And I do think Mayo was a little frustrated in that it's a bad look on him and Scott Peters.
He didn't seem frustrated.
Like,
he's on the sideline. I didn't see him screaming and yelling. I didn't see him making a big deal about it.
I would have been. I would have been, honestly.
Most coaches would have been, I think.
Because
Belichick would have fired the whole thing.
It's unacceptable.
Yeah.
And it's so easily fixed. Move ahead 6 inches. Move ahead 18. Whatever it is, till you're breaking the hip of the center, mm-hmm. and you're now a legal formation. Plus, they forget the first time. Okay, first time it happens. Don't they go back and they get the little tablet out and they show, and you probably have like a pen that you can draw a line across and be like, see this? This is where you have to be. Get your head to this line. So, but again, that's something that'll play itself out. Then we'll get to the point where we realize, wait, Vedarian Lowe is really the starting left tackle? Mm-hmm. Or, because again, I'm trying to go on the Laden Robinson. At least he's a rookie. Maybe they draft him. Maybe he develops and there's hope for your thing. By late October, he doesn't look like a rookie anymore. He's a road mauler, and he's helping. He and Onwenu on the right side are just opening up big holes.
He
for
wasn't
Ramondre
even a tackle
Stevenson.
In college, Robinson.
No. And he's going to be a guard here. Right. But I'm just, well, I think. I mean,
who the hell knows what any of them are going to be?
Touche, fair point. Who the hell knows? But I think he's a guy you could say there's upside. Where else is there upside? Onwenu is really good, so you're expecting him to be good.
Mm-hmm.
David Andrews is really good. My one problem with him is I expect him to get worse because he's getting older.
Right.
He's on the wrong side. I don't really know about City So, and then the left tackle spot.
City So left the game, you know? So
oh, yeah, that's the other issue. So Lowe and So are hurt. Two guys we're not even sure we want on the field, and now they're banged up. Yeah, it's not. There's nothing good to talk about with the line.
No, there really isn't. And if you listen to the national media, they are also very disturbed by what they're hearing. Here's Mina Kimes on ESPN the other day on the Patriots O-line.
I'm so torn on this because I think Drake May has been outstanding this preseason for all the reasons Dan just highlighted. That play action, the under center play action throw, the crosser to Polk. I mean, that is the bedrock on which this Patriots offense led by Alex Van Pelt, you know, coming from Cleveland, will be built. And we didn't even show the play he made out of structure when the defense didn't set an edge. He was able to escape and he hit KJ Osborne on the extending the play.
Hold on a second. Let me pause here. I did not set this audio up very well. This is Mina Kimes' thought. They were having a debate with Dan Orlovsky about when to start Drake May, if they should start Drake May, and she decided to highlight the things that he was doing well, which is also what Orlovsky was doing. It was a very positive segment about Drake May to start off, but then she addressed the offensive line.
But the reason we didn't show it is because it was called back because of a penalty on the offensive line, and that brings me to the reason why you don't start Drake May if they don't. I don't think it's because of Jacoby Brissett. I think it's because this offensive line might be non-functional. I mean, they were playing against Washington's backups, and yet there were miscues, blown blocks, penalties upon penalties upon penalties. Yes, they didn't have their starting center, David Andrews, but what I saw was deeply concerning, especially when you consider a young quarterback whose development is really the future of this franchise.
Yep. Yes, deeply concerning, deeply disturbing is what I would classify it as. But she's right. I mean, there's no getting around it. Anybody who watched that game at all saw the touchdown get called back to Osborne on what should have been a great play and a great highlight for Drake May. I mean, it was brutal. It was a brutal, brutal performance. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. You want to weigh in on the offensive line. Who do you guys want to see? Drake May, Jacoby Brissett, who should be out there? Have you wavered in your thinking at all? I certainly am. I'm wavering in it right now. Is Drake May all the way? Now I'm worried he's going to just get killed out there.
Come on.
So we'll get to all of that. We'll get to your phone calls as well. And when we come back, the Red Sox had a rough, rough doubleheader yesterday at Fenway Park as they begin circling the drain to start the month of September. We'll get to that next.
Once again, left tackle number 77 was lined up in the backfield.
That's the way it sounded after the second embarrassing loss to the Blue Jays last night, or yesterday, I should say. This is the WEEI Afternoon Show. I'm Christian Arkin. That's Andy Hart. Nice to have you with us here today. It's been a tough couple of weeks here for the Red Sox. Really, it's been tough since the break. These last few, though, the getting swept by Arizona at home, on your way to getting swept by the Blue Jays, who suck. Barrios was pitching yesterday. They always hit Barrios. Didn't matter. The offense has gone silent. It seems like the Red Sox here, with a month to go left in the season, currently circling the drain. Are they giving up, Andy? Do you think this is a team that is resigned to their fate? Do you think it's a team that has given it all they have and they just realize, you know, we're not good enough?
I think the latter part
I don't think it's something that's in front of mind. It's more back of mind.
Right.
Because they probably all, as much as you know when you're hot, you're hoping, yeah, we are this good. You're like, you're probably a little bit of you, human nature. It's like, can we sustain this? Are we really going to keep up? We don't really have an ace in terms of a pitching staff. You know, the lineup.
Houck's been pitched like an ace, but he's only 8-8. You know, the team doesn't score for him. So.
But no disrespect to him. He's Tanner Houck. That name doesn't carry weight. That name doesn't have a history, a track record, a resume, mm-hmm. where you just know, well, when that guy pitches, we got a horse. We got Clemens. We got whoever.
Coming into the season, we didn't think that. I feel that way about him now, though.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. I still think he fits in line with everybody else on this team, where the future might be very bright for a lot of these guys. They have laid a foundation. I know this gets back to a column that Chris Gasper wrote about, is the season already a success regardless of what happens?
Right.
Which now is really being shown that that's the reality. The season has kind of reached its finality. You're not going to make the playoffs. You're an also-ran. Did you do enough at the deadline? Whatever. You developed young player.
No, the answer is no, by the way.
See, I think it's yes. And
did
I'm going to use
enough at the deadline?
Oh, they didn't do enough. No,
okay.
No.
My answer was no to that question.
What about, is the season a success?
No, I'd say no to that, too.
See, I would say
yes.
I can't
call it a success when they crap their pants in August again.
I know, but I had very low expectations for this team. I took the under.
You didn't think anything was going to be different the way it started off the first 3 months? You didn't think this season would be different?
Beforehand. My expectations started, going into the season. Then all of a sudden, you're like, huh, do they have something? Me being a cynic was like, nah, it's early. This will peter out. And it didn't. They sustained it longer than I thought they would. So using the guy we just talked about, Gerard Mayo and the Patriots, remember his description of what success was in his pre-training camp press conference? Laying a foundation for the future, figuring out the guy. Like, whatever the words were, I feel like the Boston Red Sox were a success in a Gerard Mayo rebuild. And you have Jaron Duran that you now say, no, he's just good. He's the All-Star MVP. He's really good. You have Devers. You have Casas back. Rafaela has made himself a guy. A dude, whatever you want to say.
All those guys are lefties, by the way.
Okay, but they're good.
I know they're good, but you needed some right-handed power, and you just
okay,
got
Okay, now
Danny
you're getting
Jansen
into the details
instead.
And how you fine-tune a team. Prior to this year, I didn't think there was a foundation. I didn't think there was a foundation to
yeah,
the pitching staff.
This was a playoff team this year. They were a playoff team. They were in the wild card. They were there. They just had to protect it, and they didn't. I'm not going to hand-wave that away.
Not when it mattered.
Yes, when it mattered. They've fallen apart. They were leading into this before the break, were a playoff team. They were in the mix. They still technically are. They're the first team back. They're still ahead of Seattle and Detroit and these other also-ran teams. But they're all sort of falling down by the wayside right now. But that's not what they are. What they were all year. All year, they've been right there. They've been right there in the mix. They were close to the top of the AL East this year.
It's the longest season. Whatever people tell me, I've always hated
with
this.
That. I'm not,
I think I actually mocked you when I filled in this time slot previously. You know, if the playoffs started today, they don't start in June. They don't ever start in June or July, assuming we never have like weird pandemics or things again.
So they should just suck in August every year then?
No.
Because it's such a long season.
The next step is laying a foundation in April, May, and June that you take advantage of in August and September. Because you can lose a season early.
They traded Mookie Betts for prospects 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay? So how long do we have to lay this foundation for?
The first couple of years, there was no foundation. I didn't feel a foundation. All I was sold was Marcelo Mayer was really good. And now he's hurt again. And I have concerns. But luckily, they've repackaged and remarketed. And now we have this fabulous foursome or whatever down in Worcester.
That was Chaim Bloom's job, was to come in here and lay a foundation.
He didn't.
Yes, he did. I mean, he did. Most of these prospects are his guys.
That's why he's not here.
He
was fired.
He's not here because he wouldn't trade Chris Sale. That's why
he's not here, because it was not going anywhere. And now it feels like it's... Do you not believe it's going somewhere now?
Sure.
Okay.
But it's the same result as when Chaim Bloom was here right now. And Chaim Bloom is the one, and not just him, Dombrowski. There's a lot of Dombrowski guys there, too.
A lot of Dombrowski.
But Chaim Bloom was given the same handcuffed restrictions that Breslow's getting right now. So I don't really think it's going
anywhere. So you don't feel better about this team today than you did at this time last
year? Not if they're not going to spend in the offseason, and not if they're not going to do anything at
the
deadline.
I don't even care about the ifs.
But that's what
they already have a stronger foundation in the manager, who has decided he wanted to stay.
It's the same manager as the last 5 years.
Oh, but you don't, so you don't like it?
No, I'm just saying, what's the difference?
Last year, he was a lame duck manager.
So?
Now he's here for the foreseeable future.
And?
So I feel good about that.
Okay.
And they have guys that I now believe.
They signed him to the extension and then fell apart. Like, why do you feel good about that?
Because they're not that good. They're not good enough. They don't have a quality pitching staff to go out there night in and night out, in my opinion. They need a top-of-the-rotation guy. I
Because if you make Tanner Houck your two, they're kind of like the Patriots wide receivers. Tell me they're competitive, but there's no one. If you put a one out there and make Houck your two, and now Bayo just kind of slides into, yeah, I'm going to learn on the fly as a young guy. Who knows? Maybe I'm an ace down the road. But I feel light years better about this team now than I did a year ago. I could not have cared less about them a year ago because I thought it was over.
I like that there's young players getting better. I'm encouraged about Duran. I think that there's things to like about this team.
Do you like that Worcester now has guys that are like a step away? They've continued to develop?
Not really. I mean, that doesn't really make much difference to me.
Why?
If they can come out and play in the major leagues, fine. Marcelo Mayer's been here a long time. Gunnar Henderson, all the other people in that draft
Barry Bonds?
Are playing right now. They're playing on their teams. They're in the majors already.
Okay, forget
him
about
being
that.
In Worcester doesn't really get me all that excited.
Why?
Because I'd like to see him on the major league team.
So you're not excited about Drake May?
Eh.
Oh, okay. If you're not excited about Drake May, that'd be consistent.
I'm not even sure I want Drake May to be playing now with this offensive line.
Because I think there's a lot of people in Patriot Nation that are excited about Drake May, and he's never stepped on a game field.
That was a nice first drive he had. The rest of that game, I didn't think Drake May was exactly setting the world on fire. But he's going to get better. I agree. He's going to get better. I feel better about him than three prospects in Worcester who finally got called up to AAA. I mean, that's...
Right, it's the same thing. That's their preseason. That's their prove yourself, your young developmental time. It's fast-tracked more in the NFL than it is in baseball, obviously.
Okay, but the other guys in that Meyer draft are all playing in the majors now, and he's not. So it's taken a little longer with him. He wasn't the same sort of blue chip prospect. That's all. It's not the end of the world. I'm just saying, you know, I'm not
See,
as excited
I'm more worried
about
the injuries, and a back injury in particular for a stud young player is not what I'm looking for.
Definitely not. And really, when we're talking about the franchise here, sure, the players may get better. Some of these young guys may come up and be cheap and cost controlled, and you can build a team around them
if you want to.
I don't trust this organization to do that. I don't trust them to spend. I don't trust them to make the right moves at the deadline. I don't trust them to do any of that stuff because since Dombrowski left, they haven't even bothered trying to. That's the reality of what we're talking about here.
Yeah, I am definitely more optimistic coming off this season. And this is a little bit of that sucker bet in me that, yeah, maybe I'm a sucker. Maybe I'm a sucker that believes the Patriots are going to spend next spring and the Red Sox are going to spend this offseason because they have it. Now, I don't know if they'll go get, you know, Juan Soto or something, like the best free agent on the market and $500 million or whatever the hell it would take. But I think both teams are in the midst of a rebuild that you're actually, and what you brought is true for both teams. It's been multiple years. It's not a 1 year thing,
right?
They're basically both in year like four to five of a rebuild. And it feels like they wasted years 1, 2, and 3 in the rebuild. And now maybe there's a little bit of a late fast track here, makeup time. Now, it's not often that I'm the optimistic one in a sports debate.
I know. We got to get to baseball to get to that. Anyways, we're going to take a quick break here. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. When we come back, Patriots Tuesday. It's not Patriots Monday. It's Patriots Tuesday because we weren't on yesterday. That will roll on as we talk to the QB1, Jacoby Brissett. He joins us next.